Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy football advice, speculation, and whatever stupid stuff they decide to drop into the show. Now here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian. My co-host, as usual, Brian Johnson.
What is up, Charch?
It is good to talk to you. We've broken down quarterbacks, running backs, and now we get to the rookie wide receivers. Last year's wide receiver class was epic, and really most of it translated on the field, and even some of the guys that didn't shine brightly have opportunities to do well in their second year. This class is almost as good.
Yeah.
If that was like an A-plus class, this could be an A-level class. There are, depending on what services you use and who you like to believe, there's six or seven wide receivers with first-round grades.
Yep.
It is a fantastic wide receiver draft.
Yeah, very exciting. Only 2 weeks away from the draft. Cannot wait.
Let's break down 10 of the rookie wide receivers fantasy owners should care about the most, familiarize ourselves with those guys, talk about some possible landing spots, who we love and why we love them. And first, like we did last week, let's maybe talk about some of the teams that have wide receiver need that we think can go wide receiver early in the draft. And I've identified a handful of teams, Brian, that basically need to draft a starter right now.
Yeah.
New England. Nelson Aguilar is the number one. Enough said. Baltimore, they've got Sammy Watkins as a Band-Aid starter on a one-year deal. I know. He does nothing for me. Houston has nobody after Brandon Cooks. Tennessee has got nothing after A.J. Brown. They, of course, lost two of their three starting wide receivers in the offseason. You know, in Kansas, how about Kansas City? You know, after Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins is gone. You know, DeMarcus Robinson's just a guy. I mean, the best thing you can say about DeMarcus Robinson is he's healthy.
Yeah, everyone. I don't know if Mecole Hardman's going to pan out as a starting caliber.
He's had every opportunity to shine, and it hasn't come together. And he hasn't had the opportunity because he has. Mm-hmm. I think Hardman just is what he is at this point. The Eagles have got Jalen Reagor, and that's a bit of a mystery. And then after him, they got like nothing, and we don't even know the Reagor counts. The Eagles definitely in play at wide receiver. For Chicago, they have Allen Robinson playing on the franchise tag, and only Darnell Mooney is any good after that. They're in play. And then some fascinating ones as well. Green Bay needs a second or third receiver, depending on how you feel about MVS, who I don't love.
No.
But they could use a receiver as well as a starter, walk-in starter. And then New Orleans, we've been saying this for a couple of years now. They got Michael Thomas, and they just don't have anybody reliable after that.
There's even a few more. We'll talk about them pretty soon.
Absolutely.
When we talk about our first receiver, I'll name a few other teams.
No, Detroit's absolutely in this conversation after they lost their number one, number two, and number three receivers in the offseason.
Tyrell Williams and Breshad Perryman are their stars.
Disaster for them. And then just some other teams that need depth. Cincinnati, Washington, Atlanta, Minnesota, Carolina, Seattle, San Francisco. All need depth at receiver, but I don't know that they're going to pay the price for the kinds of guys that we're talking about here. So, lots of landing spots, lots of teams with need. Let's begin with Ja'Marr Chase from LSU. Many people have him as, I think there are three guys you could make a case for near the top of the draft. Let's start with Ja'Marr Chase. Get people familiar with him.
Ja'Marr Chase out of LSU, like he said, 6 feet, 200 pounds. I think he's the top wide receiver in this year's draft class from a reality and a fantasy perspective when it comes to the rookies. 2020 would have been his junior year at LSU, but he opted out. Did not play. I remember there's been a lot of Mike Williams, but the one from USC about 10 years ago, he didn't play.
Mike Williams?
Yeah, and Detroit took him in the first round after him not playing. That didn't pan out so well for Williams. Hopefully that's not the case for Chase, but as a true sophomore in 2019, he set the then single season SEC record for receiving yards, 1,780, 20 touchdowns. Joe Burrow was his quarterback, of course, that helped. Joe Burrow might be his quarterback
this
year.
It's possible.
We'll talk about landing spots in a second. But again, last year he opted out, so he might be a little rusty, but overall for his two-year career at LSU, 48% of his catches went for 15-plus yards. Ran a 4.38 40 on his pro day.
Unbelievable.
Not that you're going to use your broad jumping abilities in the NFL, but an 11-foot broad jump.
Dang. I would need two broad jumps to go that far.
That might even be a triple jump. He's basically got it all. You'd love to see him maybe be like 6'3", 6'4". He doesn't have like the huge height advantage that you like from the alpha receivers. But again, I think the top wide receiver option in this year's class, a comp I'm hearing a lot, is Odell Beckham Jr. Mm-hmm. And he's probably going to go in the top 10 picks. And it could be Cincinnati at 5, maybe even Miami at 6. They might be tempted
absolutely.
Enough.
Absolutely.
And then we talked about Detroit. They're at 7. So I would be shocked if he got through that gauntlet of those three teams on draft day.
Yep, I've got him going 6 to Miami, Ja'Marr Chase. The speed is remarkable, but what is really special is that he's got all of the real football skills to go along with the crazy speed. And so many times we find guys that have that kind of speed don't have the other tools, but he's a tackle breaker. He's got great vision, ball tracking skills. He can battle for balls. I mean, it's just, and you know, part of what you love because he played at LSU is he was going against NFL caliber corners and safeties all the time and still winning. So I think the only real knock on Ja'Marr Chase is, you know, we haven't seen him for a year.
Yeah, and right now in best ball and redraft, he's going around wide receiver 35, right in the Cortland Sutton, Brandon Cooks range. And he'll probably climb, depending on landing spot.
Yeah, depending on the landing spot.
I think Cincinnati would be the most enticing.
It would
reunion
be,
with Burrow and T. Higgins as kind of an Auden Tate Bobo. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'd like that so much. I think Auden Tate has potential.
Well, let's talk this through for just a second. Let's say that you're Joe Burrow. You just played behind the NFL's worst offensive line. You got hammered and injured. Or you can play with the college wide receiver that you were in such a groove with. You set the SEC's all-time receiving record for a single season. Which way do you go? The elite blindside protector, or do you go wide receiver?
The lineman's the smart pick.
It is, isn't it?
Chase is the sexy pick. So we'll see what happens.
That would be a really, really tricky decision, I think, for a lot of teams, and Cincinnati in particular. Let's go to our second wide receiver, Jaylen Waddle from Alabama. He's the first of two Alabama players that are expected to go in the top half of the draft. Jaylen Waddle's short. I mean, he's just 5'10", and he's only 182 pounds. But you watch him play, and you know, like a lot of Alabama players, man, does he play physical? Because you know that's Alabama football, and they are not going to let you get away with being a Nancy out there.
Roll Tide.
Mm-hmm. He battles for balls, and he has to a lot at his size. And I think from a fantasy standpoint, you know, being 5'10", 182, you're just not an end zone target. And I think from a fantasy standpoint, Jaylen Waddle may not ever be a double-digit touchdown scorer. And I hope that I'm wrong. But maybe he won't be, because I don't see him getting the corner fade route touchdowns.
Right.
And I don't see those times when it's third and goal and a guy like, you know, bigger receivers can just kind of like take a couple of steps forward, box out a defender, and here comes a ball. Mm-hmm. It's just Jaylen Waddle's never going to be that guy. Now, the upside is basically everything else. Arguably the most explosive athlete in the entire draft, not regardless of position, is Jaylen Waddle. Insane acceleration and burst, both at the line of scrimmage and mid-route. He can turn on the Jets 20 yards downfield and have a whole other gear to go to. He gets deep behind the coverage all the time, and here comes the ball. It's just over. Nobody will catch him once Jaylen Waddle's behind you. He turns routine crossing routes into touchdowns by simply running faster than everybody else on the field. He turns the corner, heads up the sideline, dead. And that 10-yard crossing route just turned into a 60-yard touchdown. Jaylen Waddle averaged 10 yards after the catch, which is sixth best in the country. Did it through speed. The only downsides, again, he's short. at 5'10", 182 pounds. He did have a broken ankle in college, and he's only played 971 snaps in college, which is pretty light, but not so light that you couldn't feel confident in drafting Jalen Waddle. I currently have Jalen Waddle going to the Giants at pick 11.
Okay.
I think that's the right neighborhood for him, but if it's not the Giants, pick 12, Philadelphia feels like a lock. I think he goes to one of those two.
I agree. And you know who else might go there is his teammate, former teammate, Devonta Smith.
Yes.
Also out of Alabama. 6'1", 175. Now, I might be generous with the weight here for Devonta
Smith. Yeah, he is skinny.
That's the big knock on him. Everyone's very concerned with his BMI, but I don't know. It's really, like, if he gets blown up by a safety, is an extra 10 pounds going to matter, right? Or, like, I don't know. But anyway, we talked about Ja'Marr Chase setting the SEC single-season touchdown record in 2019 with 20 touchdowns. Smith shattered that record last year, 23 touchdowns.
Wow.
117 catches, 1,856 yards. I remember in the national championship, I think he had 200 yards and, like, three touchdowns in the first half.
Insane.
The
productivity is remarkable. And, you know, at that level of productivity, this reminds me of why the Vikings liked Justin Jefferson so much was the productivity in a pro-style offense against elite defenders. That kind of productivity translates. And that's why I can't see a scenario where Smith goes to the NFL and flops unless, you know, he goes to Detroit.
And wherever he ends up, they're going to work on bulking him up a little bit. Not too much where he'll lose his speed and other abilities. But that, again, that's really the only knock. If he was 15, 20 pounds heavier right now, he'd probably be the top wide receiver prospect.
Could be.
With a bullet. So, and just like Waddle, he's probably going to end up in that Giants Eagles range on draft day. Is over under. Vegas has him at pick 11.5 right now, which puts him right in that neighborhood. And in best ball and redraft, he's going wide receiver 45, which is right in the Michael Gallup, Devontae Parker, Antonio Brown, if he plays, range. So, again, landing spot will be huge for him, but I'm not too worried about the BMI of Devonta Smith. I think he'll have a fine, if not electric, career in the NFL.
I've got Smith going to the Patriots at pick 15. Okay. If it's not there, then I think, again, the Eagles at 12 are absolutely in play, especially if Jalen Waddle does, in fact, go 11 to the Giants. I could easily see Philadelphia at 12 moving on Smith, and that would make sense. But otherwise, if you're New England, with all of the trouble they've had at wide receiver, this seems like, and they've struck out so many times, I can understand why they'd be gun-shy about drafting it in another receiver, but Smith seems so much of a sure thing, he would make a ton of sense. You know, I don't know who's going to throw him the ball, and hopefully not Cam Newton, but that would be a whole other conversation. Let's go to our number four wide receiver, Rashad Bateman from Minnesota. Yeah. An elite route runner, probably the best pure route runner in this draft. Very physical, battles for contested balls. When the ball's in the air and it's heading his way, he looks like he owns that pass. Mm-hmm. And I like that about Bateman. Very productive in what was often an inconsistent Minnesota offense in his time there. And very good after the catch. Now, there are some knocks on Bateman. He has had more drops than he should. He's not an athlete on the order of Chase, Waddle, and Smith.
No.
He just isn't. Those guys are freaks. Mm-hmm. Bateman isn't that level. And he doesn't have top-end speed. I think the comp for Bateman is Keenan Allen. This is the positive pro. You know, this is the upside comparison is Keenan Allen, who was really basically good at everything, although Keenan Allen didn't have the drops, but he was good at everything but didn't have the top-end speed. I think Bateman is going to be that kind of player. He will be productive. I think he does not have the athleticism to be a triple-A elite receiver. I don't think he's going to be somebody that ends up going 12 touchdowns season in and season out, but I think he ends up with a productive career depending on where he ends up going. Right now, I am going to pick 20 to Chicago for Rashad Bateman.
Yeah, he seems like one of the safest picks out there.
Agreed.
Not the insane ceiling, like you said, but a very, very safe floor, it would seem.
Let's go to our number five wide receiver, Elijah Moore from Ole Miss.
Yeah, just another little guy, 5 foot nine, 185. He'll probably be a primary slot receiver in the NFL. Second in receptions and yards last year to Devonta Smith. 86 catches, almost 1,200 yards in just eight games for Elijah Moore. Also had eight touchdowns, averaged 14 yards per catch. But what I remember most about him was the dog piss celebration.
What?
At Mississippi State.
This.
He scored a touchdown. He got out on all fours.
Oh,
lifted up
right. Yeah, right.
Got a penalty. They were probably going to go for two in the win. But they couldn't do that. Had to go back for the extra point and tie. Kicker misses the extra point. And I think they were like in contention for the playoffs. I think Ole Miss was actually good. So
what a disaster.
That was a huge disaster for Moore. Hopefully he's matured a little bit since then. I'm sure he's learned his lesson. But again, lacks size, but amazing speed. Mm-hmm. 4.35 in 40 on his pro day. Great hands, polished route runner. He's going to excel from the slot wherever he ends up. A comp you hear a lot is Tyler Lockett, mm-hmm. which hopefully means all of his production doesn't come in like one or two games per season like Tyler Lockett.
Yeah.
But right now he's wide receiver 70-ish in redraft. I think he's certainly a draftable, I mean, not draftable, like a high wide receiver pick in Dynasty Empire formats, but landing spot's going to really determine if he has value for me in 2020.
The beauty for Elijah Moore is there are these teams at the bottom end of the first half that all need receivers and good teams. The Saints at 28, Green Bay at 29. You know, Green Bay, who was the, it's been a long time since they've had a pure slot receiver.
Randall Cobb.
Randall Cobb. Kansas City, now they've got the slot position covered in with Tyreek Hill, so maybe he doesn't end up there, but that is a team that needs receiver help, and they play Hill all over the place, so I wouldn't rule him out there potentially. And then if you go, you know, if Moore slips into the top of the second round, well, now there's a bunch of, you know, there's a bunch of new teams that are possibilities for him as well. Atlanta with a fourth pick in the second round as a possibility. Miami's a possibility. Detroit coming back again. So lots of spots for Elijah Moore. Let's take a break. When we come back, five more electrifying rookie receivers, where they may go in the draft, who we like, who we don't like. You're listening to Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly. I'm Paul Charchian. My co-host is Brian Johnson. We're breaking down rookie wide receivers. Thank you for joining us. The number six wide receiver is Terrace Marshall. Don't call him Terrence.
No.
It's not Terrence. Terrace Marshall. He played for LSU. That is, I have reason to believe, a very good offense. Long arms with a huge catch radius. He's tall and skinny. But he's young enough that he projects to fill out his build, and that shouldn't be a problem. When you watch Terrace Marshall, you see these big loping steps that just eat up yards. And it looks like he's not working that hard, but he's outrunning everybody on the field. He is fast with a natural stride. The stride to me looks more like a track star than anybody else. You can see, I just imagine with a baton in his hand instead of a football in his hand for Marshall. And maybe the best true deep ball receiver in the draft. I mean, he looks to me like he's built to catch bombs. He'd be a lethal combo next to Michael Thomas or Devontae Adams, because those are guys that I think are that play in the first 20 yards of the field. And then I think about what he could bring to those teams to stretch the field deep. Oh, I love those landing spots for Terrace Marshall. Now, he does have some, they all have dings, right? He did drop some passes. He's not a naturally gifted route runner, and he's not as effective on short passes. In fact, LSU, you know, rarely threw to him in behind the line of scrimmage within the first 5-10 yards of scrimmage. They sent him deep all the time, and that's where he was most effective. And we're going to talk later about some guys that are better closer to the line of scrimmage, but not Terrace Marshall. So I like him for teams like New Orleans, Green Bay, that have already got a lot of guys that can catch the ball near the line of scrimmage, be productive under 20, and this would be a guy that can bring some deep juice to those offenses.
Nice. I like it.
Let's go to our number seven wide receiver, Rondell Moore.
Rondale Moore out of Purdue, very comparable to Elijah Moore, not only in last name, but in size, also 5'9", about 180 pounds, projects to be another slot receiver. 114 catches and 12 touchdowns as a true freshman in 2018 and nearly 1,300 yards. But he's only played 7 games across the last 2 seasons. Now, the Big Ten only played like 6 games last year. So, but there's some injury concerns in his past, but unicorn speed for Rondale Moore, ran the second fastest 40 among wide receivers, 4.31. Great route runner, great hands. Again, a great receiver, just undersized. He's probably a little more of a boom bust prospect than Elijah Moore. He could be Steve Smith one day.
Yeah.
Or he could be Tavon Austin. Who knows? But same as Elijah Moore. Right now in redraft, he's in the wide receiver 70-ish range. Landing spot will really determine if he has a lot of value this year. But a very enticing prospect, despite being an undersized slot receiver. Very explosive and a guy who'll probably see going in late second, early third in dynasty drafts, depending on your league, but in general.
I've seen Rondale Moore go as early as pick 21 in various mocks to Indianapolis, as early as there, and as late as the early second round. Most people think he goes somewhere in that range. The number 8 rookie wide receiver is Kadarius Toney from Florida, a fascinating guy in Florida. He's a jack-of-all-trades guy that Florida used. He's a receiver, but Florida ran him the ball a ton. And so the comparable I have to him is Curtis Samuel or a smaller version of Deebo Samuel. Really jackknife kind of guy. Took a bunch of handoffs, as I mentioned. Now, he's thin. He's just 177 pounds on a 6-foot frame, but he plays way stronger than that. He's great in traffic. We were just talking about how Terrace Marshall doesn't do well in traffic, and they didn't get him the ball close to the line of scrimmage. He's the opposite. They did bubble screens, screen passes. They ran the ball, tons of stuff at and near the line of scrimmage for Kadarius Toney because he was so good in traffic with the vision and the balance and the ability to pick through defenders. Tons of big plays, tons of yards after catch for Toney, despite the fact that, again, he's dealing in traffic all the time. He's still at great yards after catch, super explosive. And again, for a guy his size, and I think we're in that stage of the draft where the bigger body guys are largely going, smaller body guys, he breaks way more tackles than he should. Toney was a bit of a highlight machine at Florida and projects into the top of the second round where he could end up with, possibly the Jets, the Falcons, Miami makes sense, Detroit makes sense. All teams that could use help at the slot receiver or just a jackknife kind of guy.
He certainly sounds very Curtis Samuel-y, like you
said. I think Curtis Samuel's the best comp. I do.
Maybe he'll play alongside him. That would be pretty crazy.
No, they shouldn't because they already got a Curtis Samuel.
That's true.
So in my mind, they should not go
to Kadarius Toney.
Let's go to rookie wide receiver number 9.
Dyami Brown out of North Carolina University of 6 feet, 185 pounds, a little bigger than the last few receivers I've mentioned. Runs excellent vertical routes, had an 18.4-yard ADOT last year. That was the highest in college football, averaged 20 yards per catch. Issues with drops, though, and scouts say he runs a very limited route tree. He has a lot of potential, but he needs some serious polish. Unlikely to make an immediate impact this year, regardless of where he lands. I don't see him having much value in redraft, especially on draft day, maybe on your league's draft day, that is. Maybe as the season wears on, he'll get a little more experience, have a little more impact, but he's really just a dynasty asset right now in my mind. And I don't know where you got him going in the...
I have him going late second round, which puts him in the conversation for teams like Baltimore, New Orleans, Green Bay. Buffalo could use it. Buffalo's actually in pretty good shape. Wide receiver's not a need for them.
Yeah, not
maybe
really.
Kansas City that we talked about. Yeah. So that's that brings us to number 10.
Round it out.
Cade Johnson from South Dakota State University.
He's
a jackrabbit. His pro comparison, his favorable pro comparison is Tyler Lockett. Your favorable comp, Tyler Lockett. He is a slot receiver. He was a zero-star high school recruit. Despite putting up 1,000 yards and 16 touchdowns in his senior year of high school, he has elite acceleration, sudden moves that shake defenders, physically and mentally very tough despite not being a very large player. And the thing that's put Cade Johnson into these conversations here is a dominating Senior Bowl where he was fantastic. And that happens so oftentimes with small school guys. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to see, well, how do you look at the Senior right. Bowl so we can see you against players from Alabama and mm-hmm. LSU and the SEC? And he looked great. Now, he played the slot almost exclusively, like I said, so his landing spot will be a team that needs slot help. Probably not going to go until the third round. He's small, just 5'11", 175 pounds, short arms, short catch radius. So you need an accurate passer. My Minnesota Vikings need a slot receiver.
That sounds about right.
He could find his way there as a possibility. Washington could use a slot receiver. Mm-hmm. These are teams that don't need starters, but teams that might want to fill in with a pure slot receiver. Atlanta, we've mentioned a couple of times, slot receiver as well as a possibility there, perhaps, for Cade Johnson.
Right on.
It's a deep draft for wide receivers. A lot of these guys are going to make a huge difference. And for fantasy and dynasty owners that maybe didn't get on board for whatever reason, you didn't land one of the great young receiving talents last year or a couple of them last year, you immediately have a chance to make good on that this year.
You know, it's the interesting part of this podcast is we didn't talk about probably the best receiving prospect in the draft. Tight end Kyle Pitts.
Well, let's do that next time. What do you think?
Talk about him next.
We'll talk through tight ends.
And there are other tight ends. People like just forget about. There's actually there very intriguing tight ends. Right. But no one cares about them because they're not Kyle Pitts.
The only thing that anybody cares about is Kyle Pitts. Should Kyle Pitts, let's start next week's podcast with this. Help remind me. Should Kyle Pitts be the first rookie taken in tight end mandatory dynasty and empire leagues?
Interesting.
Man, if you can lock down that tight end position for a decade, what an advantage that is. I'm not even talking about like super premium tight end leagues. Just tight end mandatory dynasty leagues. Should Kyle Pitts, who looks like a transcendent once a decade prospect at the position, should he be the first rookie taken in dynasty and or empire leagues?
In non-super flex leagues too, in one quarterback leagues.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Super flex league, that's a reach.
Yeah.
All right. Real quick though, last week we teased, you know, Pitts could be a pick before any wide receiver. And we said Vernon Davis and Jeremy Shockey were the two names we came up with.
Yeah.
A wide receiver went before Shockey. I'm blanking on who it was, but Vernon Davis was the sixth overall pick.
Wow.
Went before any wide receiver, but that's because the wide receivers that year, Santonio Holmes, he was the first one selected.
Ooh.
Santonio Holmes. Then Chad Jackson, Snorris Moss.
Wow.
Greg Jennings, the one good one. But then Travis Wilson, Derek Hagan, Brandon Williams.
What a bad class.
I don't even remember these guys.
That's insane. Now go back to that Patriots pick. Was it Chad Johnson? No.
Chad Jackson.
Chad Jackson.
Yeah.
One of the worst draft picks, like history of the NFL level bad. I mean, they had nothing from him whatsoever. You know, we alluded earlier to the Patriots' history of terrible wide receiver drafting, and he's certainly part of it.
You can just go back to last year. They picked N'Keal Harry over Debo Samuel and A.J. Brown.
Oh. Yeah.
And then, of course, Terry McLaurin went. A lot of teams whiffed
on McLaurin, right?
But just whiffed in general. Marquise Brown was the top wide receiver last year. I'd forgotten that. Picked by Baltimore.
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, my bad.
Yeah, that's okay. He was. And Marquise Brown, if Marquise Brown were in this year's draft, he'd be a late second, early third pick.
Something like that.
You know, just so sounds much of the, right. You know, so oftentimes just the, you know, the quality of the draft class pick, you know, ends up, you know, being
I was
a big
thinking
part
of Henry Ruggs, another big mistake. Like, as the top
that was
wide receiver
a huge issue,
overall.
Wasn't it?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
We've ragged on that pick 20
we
times.
We nailed that. Yeah. We nailed that as a huge mistake. And how about now we're getting, it's very Minnesota centric at the end of this podcast. I loved that sometime roughly November, early December, when the Vikings the teams never do this when they release their draft day footage.
Oh, yeah.
Of the Eagles taking Jalen Reagor.
Yeah, that's great.
And then the Vikings going crazy on Zoom after Reagor was picked because Justin Jefferson fell to them.
That's all of us on when we're doing our own fantasy drafts from our laptop, right? Yeah, you're expecting to get sniped and you don't. And you're like, yes,
I got my guy.
Yeah, that was like one of my favorite videos from 2020 was that Vikings.
Part of the reason I love it was it had a little bit of smack talk to it, which the NFL doesn't do nearly enough of, as far as I'm concerned. And number two is it really does show that there are, you know, all the deep dives and the analytics that these teams do, they really do have favorites and they really do have guys that are like, I can't believe he was there for our pick. You can tell that's the Vikings were having that moment with Justin Jefferson. The I can't believe he fell to us. Moment.
And they absolutely nailed the pick, of course, which makes the video that much better.
Yeah, they did.
And Reagor, I don't want to laugh at his struggles, but that also makes the video even that much better.
It hurts a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you're an Eagles fan.
Eagles always whiff on wide receivers, too.
They got to get that.
J.J.
Right.
Arcega-Whiteside, he was a couple years ago. They could have had a lot of.
He was a second rounder. And they needed him so badly at various stretches to play, and he couldn't play.
We were excited about him, too, I remember.
Jaws.
Oh, well.
It never worked out. Thank you for listening to the podcast, and especially for those of you that take time to rate, review, and subscribe. We appreciate your devotion to our off-season version of Fantasy Football Weekly. We will be back with more. And by the way, we'll do tight ends next week. Let's also just hit on a couple of the key movements in free agency over the past couple of weeks. You know, like Arizona's now got a running back competition and some other stuff that we'll hit on as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.
Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.